This program is made possible by a grant from the Pennsylvania Humanities Council.
Traveling the back roads of Pennsylvania, one comes upon reminders of a time past. Constructed of fieldstone, wood, and brick, they are the one-room schools that still survive. Some have been remodeled as homes, others continue to be used as schools by Amish and Mennonite groups. But many stand idle, unchanged except for the ravages of time. The door ajar, the slate tile fallen from the roof, the playground overgrown by sumac and wild blackberries. 50 years ago, one-room schools were the foundation of our rural education system. Today, the voices of those who remember life in the one-room school grow silent. Few remember when the school bell hurried children along a country road, when the pot-bellied stove heated the school, and water had to be carried from the spring. Welcome to Tattletales, a journey into the past that follows the byways of storytelling. These tales are based on the recollections and impressions of storyteller Ray Gray. In this program, we reflect on the one-room school from the perspective of teachers who taught there. Winnie Ambrose is one of those teachers. She taught in 9 Pennsylvania schools during the first half of the 20th century.
Things were different then than the way you have to do now. Now, we went through 8th grade, and when you thought you had brains enough to do it, you'd go out and take the examination. You could take that examination. It was sent out. I can't remember now whether it come from the state, the county, or where. But if you could pass that and you were old enough, you could teach school. Now, I passed it when I was 16, and I couldn't get a school, and I knew there was no use to try, and my mother wouldn't lie. Now, some of the parents lied, and their children did go in and teach school younger than 18. And then when I was 17, I thought, I'll get nerve enough, and I'll go up and ask the superintendent if he'll just please let me teach. Now I couldn't let a year before, and now I'm 17. And he put his arm around me and hugged me, and he said, I want you to be one of my teachers someday. He said, if you'll just wait one more year, I'll see that you get a school. You know what? I got the worst one that I believe was in the state of Pennsylvania. Now, that school only had about 15 or 18 pupils in it, and those children came to school in sleds, according to the weather, we'll say. Some rode horseback. Sometimes they came on a horse and buggy or so on. And you didn't have too much of a problem. And the most problem I had there was the boys liking me, with some big ones in there. Mm-hmm. And they liked their teacher. And I had one sneaked up and kissed me one day. And I told him, I said, now listen, if you want me for your teacher, don't you ever do that again, because I'll lose my job. The parents there knew that I whipped the children for everything that I could get them for, to get them to do what was right. And I had one, his name was Tom Drummer. And I had such beautiful curls, and I got a wig on now. But I had such beautiful curls hanging down, and I wore a bow ribbon. And he asked me one day if I would give him one of my curls. Mm-hmm. So he was usually in trouble every day. Tom Drummer was his name. So I said, I'll tell you, Tom, I'll cut you one off, a little round curl, you know, and I'll put it in the Bible, and tonight, before you go home, you come and get it. Mm-hmm. So here he got in trouble, and I gave him a whipping, and he went home and forgot, went out and went home. See, you whipped him at the end of the day, and the way he went home. Here in about 10 or 15 minutes, here comes Tom back. Now I thought somebody's told him to get me. You know what? He came back after his curl.
Sir, I'm Miss Williams. Supposed to teach at the Willow Hill Country School?
Yes, yes, Miss Williams. Come in. Sit down beside my desk.
Thank you, sir.
Now then, let's see your records. You're 17. You have a partial certification. Now, Miss Williams, the board has rules. Of course, you will not marry during the terms of your contract. And as a single woman, you will conduct your personal life in a proper manner. You will not ride in a carriage or automobile with a man, unless he is your father or brother. There will be no loitering downtown in the ice cream store, no smoking cigarettes, and you will be home between the hours of 8 p.m. and 6 a.m. That is, unless you're attending a school function. Is that understood?
Yes, sir.
Now, for your class, you will have young men as students who are nearly your age. You will not dress in bright colors. Under no circumstances are you to dye your hair. And you will wear two petticoats. And your dress cannot be shorter than 2 inches above your ankle. Is that agreeable to you?
Yes, sir.
Finally, for the school itself, we have these rules. You will sweep the floor at least once daily. Scrub the floor at least once a week with hot, soapy water. You will need to clean the blackboards at least once a day. And last but not least, when it is cold outside, you will start the fire at 7 a.m. so the room is warm when the children arrive. Is that understood? Is that understood?
Yes, sir. I understand.
Good, Miss Williams, good. Now, you will be paid $40 a month. If all goes well this year, you will attend Summer Institute, and we will talk about next year.
In the old days, teachers were expected to walk the straight and narrow. It is hard to imagine teachers today putting up with similar restrictions on their personal conduct. But teachers had rules to enforce, too, rules governing the behavior of their students. Maintaining order was not easy. There were students who liked to challenge the authority of their teachers and parents who would back them up.
Certain ones that were real nervous, those are the ones you'd send for water. It wasn't too far to go, but it kind of relieved their nerves to go, so I had three that I trusted to go, and they usually wanted to go for the water. Here we found out that they were urinating in the water and letting us drink it. Now, my boyfriend was a teacher, and he taught up in the borough, and I didn't have anything to whip them with. So I, when the day came that I was going to whip them, I sent somebody to get the gum hose to borrow off of him. But the reason why I got a little bit scared was one of the boys that was in trouble had a stepbrother, see? And the stepbrother found out what these three boys were going to do. One had a penknife, one had a spike, and what that other boy had, I can't remember, but they were really going to work on me. Now, another boy wrote a note, laid on the side of his desk, and I read it. And I thought, well, now I am in trouble, but I'm not going to give up. I'm going to go through with it. So I sent for the hose, and the hose came. Now, when I went to get this first one, he rammed me into a seat, and they're all nailed fast to the floor. You know, those old black legs they had. We broke the seat off all four legs at the floor, and I went down on the floor, and it made me mad, and I just grabbed him. I dragged him over to where the broom was, and I hit him over the head with the broom because they were going to kill me. And I figured this is soft defense. If I lose my job or whatever, my life is going to be worth more than my job. So I hit him, and it broke the piece off about that long and went clear through the building. I said to the other two boys, I said, now listen, if he'd have taken his whipping like he should have in the first place, we wouldn't have had any trouble. You know you did wrong. You know the health officer could get after me for allowing you to do things like that and not do anything about it. So the other two come up and took their whippings. But that, after that, they had a school board meeting. Now, this is how they did then. I want you to know how the old-timers did. They had a meeting over me breaking that broom handle over his head. Now, the father came to the meeting. And they asked him, they said, do you want us to expel us a teacher? He says, no, I don't. He said, she's a good teacher, and we want her, but we don't want her to kill anybody. That's all he said. That was his answer when they asked him about the teacher.
Cane Tuck was the name of a one-room school that stood on a ridge in the hill country of southwestern Pennsylvania. People who sent their children to Cane Tuck School, well, they were poor farmers, people who made a living from the rocky soil and supplemented it by working in the coal mines. In bad times, they depended on family to help out. Here, family stuck together. Even in school, these close ties were important. It was in 1915 that Louise Edwards was hired to teach in Cane Tuck School. single, just 18 years old. That summer she rented a room from a family that lived half a mile from the school. A week before classes started, Louise cleaned the school. She dusted, scrubbed and oiled the floors, and put in her teaching supplies. Outside, she cleaned and lined the outhouse. She even picked out a place for a flower garden come spring. Finally, everything was set for the big day. It was a sunny morning in September when Louise Edwards hurried to school to welcome her first class of 40 students, grades 1 through 8, ages 5 through 16. At 8:30, Louise rang the bell, and there she stood in front of the white-frame building. She watched the students coming up the dirt road. The young ones, they came laughing and talking. The older ones, and particularly the boys, well, they eyed that pretty young teacher. The last bell was rung at 9 o'clock, and the students filed into the classroom. Following the orders she had learned at Summer Institute, Louise read the Bible. They all said the Lord's Prayer and saluted the flag together. Now, the teacher had an option to sing a song, but this morning Louise wanted to take the role and then spend some time going over her rules for the classroom. Children, the first thing I want to tell you is that this is your school as much as my school. We have to work together if we're going to have a good school year. Excuse me, ma'am. It was one of the older boys in the back of the room. Excuse me, ma'am, but are you gonna allow us to chew? A ripple of laughter erupted from the older boys at the back of the room. First, young man, you'll have to learn that you do not interrupt your teacher. And second, a quick answer to your question, no.
Ma'am, last teacher said we could chew just long as we spit into our sardine cans.
A ripple of laughter came from the back of the room again. What's your name, young man? I think I'll have to speak with your father about your manners.
My name's Norbert Truck, ma'am. Hey, but I don't think it'll do much good you're talking to my pa. You know, he chews the same as me.
Edward's confrontation with Norbert that first day set the tone for the first few weeks of school. Time after time, Norbert and his two cousins challenged her, whether it was over the right to carry water from the spring or how long they stayed at the outhouse. Control of the classroom was contested between teacher and students, and that battle continued until one day Louise was working with the first graders. She heard a sound, a strange sound, from the back of the room. She looked up to see Norbert wiping his lip after spitting into the sardine can.
Norbert, I told you there will be no chewing tobacco in my classroom. I will not have you spitting on the floor, that disgusting habit.
Louise started towards the back of the room. As she approached Norbert, his cousin pulled out a penknife and raised it threateningly. Before she could say a word, a third cousin jumped up and pushed her backwards. She hit a desk and fell to the floor. Stunned for a moment, Louise did not move. Then you could see her face turn crimson with rage. She jumped up and grabbed her assailant. With the boy in a headlock, Louise dragged him to the cloakroom, where the first thing she saw was the hickory broom handle. Letting go, she grabbed the broom, whacked him across the back with the handle. The boy dropped to the floor in pain. Louise turned back to the classroom, still clutching the broom.
Now, which will you have, this broom handle or my switch?
Dumbfounded by her rage, Norbert and his cousin chose the willow switch to the hickory broom handle. In turn, 2 6-foot boys were licked by 1 5-foot teacher. Next morning, Norbert and his cousin came to school with Mr. Schrock. Seated at her desk, Louise glanced up to see the farmer, a 2-day beard and chewing tobacco, coming right up the aisle to her.
Lady, you got no right beating those boys like you did. Why, I want to tell you I come from West Virginia. We'd use a shotgun on a teacher just for that.
Louise looked straight into the father's eyes.
Mister, you can take it with a grain of salt, but I come from Fayette County, Pennsylvania, where they kill you and tell you about it afterwards. Those boys are going to follow my rules. I was hired as teacher, and I intend to rule until the board fires me. A smile crossed the farmer's face. Ma'am? I do believe you're the kind of teacher these boys need. If and you don't want them chewing in your school, then you tell them so. And if they give you any lip, come tell me. I'll back you with my strap.
The one-room school teacher had others to deal with besides students and their parents. The teacher was an employee of the whole community and had to contend with the school board, the school's neighbors, taxpayers in general, and most of all, the county superintendent of schools. Nothing made the teacher more nervous than a visit from the county superintendent.
Now, I'm going to tell you something happened there. I don't care who knows this, but this happened. This school building that I was teaching in had two stoves in it because it was a double room all on one floor, see? And they sat three in a seat. You know, they'd have to with 67 children. Now, these stoves were in that building in the form of a hypotenuse. That would be like one in this far corner and one in back this way, you see, this direction. And they started to smoke so bad. And some days we'd teach school in Coal House, and the rest of them would go playing. The smoke was so bad. And we tried to teach out in the hall. And the parents came one morning and took all the children that they could pick up and took them home. They said, well, I've got a lawn in a place like that. So they took them home. Now, I come home, and I'm living here in Beaver. And didn't I, let me see, I come home, and I was seen in Beaver, or else I was seen coming out the road here by the school director. So I always ask him if I saw Mr. Hammond, was his name, I asked him, I said, how am I getting along? You know, the school director knows more than you know about you. You better believe it, because the parents are always on their backs. And he said, well, what I want to know is what was you doing down in Beaver at 10:30? And I said, how could I teach school when the parents come and took the children home? We didn't have any children. Now, here's what I did. I decide that I'm going to find out why two stoves that's crossways from one another smoke. So what did I do but write into Harrisburg and ask him? Oh, my God, the letter I got back. They said, do you mean to tell me that as many times as we've had a report from there that those stoves are not fixed, but we understood they were fixed years ago? So they wrote a letter down here to the courthouse. They wrote one to the health officer. And they all got into trouble.
Hello, Miss Jordan, students. I was in the area and I thought I'd stop by, check the school, and maybe observe a class.
Why, Mr. Wilson, I wasn't expecting a visit from the county superintendent. I mean, so early in the year and all, but you're welcome. Come in. My older students were just about to... I mean, they were going to... I'm sure you'll want to sit down. Why don't you sit here by the stove?
Thank you, Miss Jordan. Now, what were your older students about to do?
Yes, Mr. Wilson. My older students were about to... the stove. I better put some coal in. Just a minute.
Now, Miss Jordan, I'm seated next to the stove. You've stoked it. Now, what will your lesson be?
Yes, Mr. Wilson. My older students were about to... They were going to...
Excuse me, Miss Jordan.
Yes, Linda. Yes?
Excuse me, ma'am, but we're ready to recite our civil government lessons.
Yes, Mr. Wilson. My older students are ready with their civil government lesson.
well, Miss Jordan. I would say your older students know their lesson. I thank you for your warm reception. My only criticism is that you better be more conservative with the coal supply. At the rate you're going, you'll use it all up before the first snowfall.
If the one-room schoolteacher escaped criticism from the county superintendent, then there were local residents also watching school activities.
Hello, Mr. Marshall. This is William Bailey. I own the farm that backs to the school. Aren't you on the school board?
Yes, Mr. Bailey. What can I do for you?
Well, I wanted to tell you you're going to have to do something with that new teacher, Miss Davies.
Why? Is she causing some problem for your farm?
Well, not exactly, but I want to tell you, she was out on the playfield yesterday playing baseball. And when she ran the bases, why, she hiked up her skirt, you could see her knees. Now that ain't proper for a school teacher.
Despite unexpected visits from the county superintendent and meddling neighbors, the success of the one-room school teacher ultimately depended on her relationship with the students.
The red brick one-room school stood at the foot of the mountain in Perry County, Pennsylvania. It was late afternoon, a week before Christmas of that year, 1920. Outside the school, a light snow was falling. Inside, oil lamps lighted the room as afternoon turned to evening. From the pot-bellied stove came a crackling sound. Waves of heat rolled across the room. The walls were decorated with green paper Christmas trees covered with white paper stars. Pine boughs covered the windowsills and Miss Davies' desk. A smell of pine filled the room where students and teacher worked quietly.
Excuse me, ma'am.
It was Tommy, one of the third grade boys.
Excuse me, but I was wondering, are you planning to treat for Christmas?
I don't know, Thomas.
I don't know if I have the money. Why do you ask? Oh, it's nothing, ma'am. Just wondering, thank you.
Clarissa Davies might get into trouble for showing her knees on the playground, but she was a bright teacher and did not miss the significance of Tommy's visit to her desk. It was a custom in those days to punish a teacher who did not treat her students with Christmas candy. The students would come early in the morning and lock the school door. It was called barring the teacher. Several days passed, nothing more was said, until 3 days before the beginning of Christmas vacation. That afternoon, after the students left the building, Tommy slipped back inside and approached the desk.
Excuse me, Miss Davies, ma'am. Do you remember what we talked about last week?
Yes, Thomas.
Well, ma'am, I heard some older kids talking. They said you weren't going to treat, so they're planning to bar you tomorrow morning.
Clarissa thanked Tommy for the advice. When he was gone, she considered the warning and decided he was not sent by the older students as she first thought. No, Tommy was trying to win a favor and secure a treat for himself. That night, Clarissa Davies decided to lay some plans of her own. She set the alarm for 4 o'clock in the morning. She would be there to greet her students who planned to bar her from the school. It was a clear winter sky and half moon that guided Clarissa the next morning as she walked the mile from the house where she boarded to the red brick school. Outside the building, she paused and listened. No sound. She was the first to school. Quickly, the young teacher let herself into the classroom and locked the door again. Because it was cold, she stirred the fire in the stove and added some coal, then settled down to wait for the early visitors. At 6:30, just as the first light of day was coming through the window, she heard voices outside. Clarissa hid behind the desk and waited as the window opened and 3 boys climbed into the room. Whispering among themselves, they went straight to the stove to warm up.
Ah, boy, that heat feels good. Yeah, it feels good, but wait a second. Why is this stove warm this early in the morning? You don't think she didn't?
Clarissa stood up just as the boys turned to inspect the classroom. With a smile, she greeted them. Good morning, students. You've come early for some extra work? Why, I never would have expected you three to be interested in extra schoolwork. Surprised at first, then angry, the boys stomped around until Miss Davies opened the door. Outwitted by the teacher, they decided to go home for some breakfast before regular classes. Nothing more was said that day, not even a visit from Thomas the Tattletale. Next morning, the last day before Christmas vacation, Clarissa Davies expected trouble, and she was not disappointed. When she arrived at school, nearly the whole class was there, all of them locked inside. She knocked on the door. One of the older boys called out to her,
Miss Davies, we ain't open the door lest you get a treat. We'll stay here till spring if we have to.
Miss Davies laughed and turned back to the door.
I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll make a sporting event of it. I'm going over to the road. When I get there, you send out your fastest runner, boy or girl. We'll race to town. If I win, you buy the treat. If your runner wins, I'll buy the treat.
Without another word, Clarissa retreated to the road, took off her heavy coat, and waited. Suddenly, the school door opened, and out sprinted one of the oldest boys. Clarissa hiked her skirt and started for town. The mile to town was a long run for anyone. For a quarter of it, the athletic teacher held her own. Then she began to slow her pace, and before long the boy was even with her. Laughing, her sides splitting, Clarissa slowed to a walk and turned to her competitor.
I give up, James. You win. You win. I'll treat. Just come to town and help me carry the candy back to the school.
Honor and face were saved by teacher and students that Christmas Eve. Though Clarissa Davies taught only 1 year at the Red Brick School, her name and story were never forgotten. For years, students and adults alike loved to hear the story of the quick-witted, light-footed schoolteacher.
Tattletales, impressions of the one-room school recalled through the art of storytelling. In this program, you heard storyteller Ray Gray, former teacher Winnie Ambrose, and the voices of James Zullinger, Barbara Glenn, Heather Glenn, Steve Herb, and students and teachers from the Fishing Creek Elementary School. The producer was Fritz Williams, production engineer Ron Barron, music by Mark Osterman. I'm Ginny McCullough. Tattletales is a production of WITF-FM, Harrisburg.
This program is made possible by a grant from the Pennsylvania Humanities Council.